They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, you're on the Commons, and joining us today on the Commons, we have a gentleman who's got an incredible story, Robert Stern. He's written a book, and we're going to find out all about it. He's also got a website, hoawars.com. Robert, I know you're cold, and it's cold up here, too, but thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have a nice, warm time on the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Sue.
All right. Tell us, you've got a book that you wrote called HOA Wars.
Yes, ma'am. I never thought I was going to write this book. I've written three other books, and I thought my last one was my last one, but I went through such an incident with homeowners associations that I decided to write this. I had gotten involved in HOAs very early in my life, back in the 70s in California, was my first HOA where I bought a property, a condo, for $25,000. And that was the beginning. I never served on that board, but I participated in it and I became familiar with it. And through the years, I've served on different HOA boards and have been involved when there's been a lot of various problems and I wanted to protect my investment. I'm a CPA by training. I've been a chief financial officer and a very successful businessman. And so I was sitting in my home one day in Nevada. I actually have a number of properties, two homes, one in Nevada, Henderson, Nevada, and one in Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina. Both are under HOAs, and I have a couple rental properties that are under HOAs as well. And I was sitting, having just recently retired, I was in Nevada, had moved from California after 30-some years in California, moved to Nevada, and I got a notice that I had, like, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I had about three too many leaves on my lawn. And
that's not much of an exaggeration.
And I got a little bit upset. So I decided maybe I should get involved, and I decided eventually to, and that was in 2010, and by 2011 I was running for the board and got elected. And because I have a financial background, one of the first things I looked at was the financial statements just to see the overall health of the association. And I discovered that this association was rich. And I mean rich. There was literally, this, just so you can get a size, sense of size, there's over 1,600 homes. And that's not necessarily the biggest one in Henderson, Nevada. There's one there that's over 7,000 homes. And I've lived in HOAs where as little as five units were involved, and this one is the largest I've lived in, is over 1,600 homes. And I took a look at the financials and found that they had so much money, and I couldn't figure out why they had so much money, so I started to investigate. And they had been accumulating funds. This particular HOA had no amenities, no tennis courts, no clubhouses, no swimming pools, no gymnasiums, basically landscape common areas. And but they had, it's been set up by a developer that had done other developments in the area that did have facilities and amenities, and they decided to assess the homeowners at the same rate. Well, at that rate, a lot of monies were being accumulated over the years. So by the time I got into the property, there was just so much money there. And the board, when I got on the board and discovered they didn't want to give any of the money back to the homeowners, and under Nevada law, which is the same in North Carolina, which I just read this morning, surplus funds is defined in Nevada and in North Carolina as having, after you've met the reserve requirements and they're fully funded, you're required by law to return the surplus funds to the homeowners. So that wasn't real popular. That wasn't real popular with the other board members, but I was on a quest to return the money. I saw no less than $1.7 million that was easily declarable surplus funds. But I took a half a million off of that and reduced the $1.7 million down to $1.2, which represented the annual budget. That's $1.2 was the annual budget, and that represented about $700 per homeowner if they got returned the $700 or $175 per quarter. So I began a quest that took 18 months, and eventually some board members agreed, and I had to file a couple actions with the state of Nevada. But through the jockeying for position and getting agreement, I led the charge that absolutely, over an 18-month period, returned a little under $1.2 million to homeowners, and every homeowner got $700 returned to them over that period of time.
Robert, tell me, one of the big problems that we see is embezzlement. So when you have over $1 million sitting there with no adult supervision anywhere, I mean, that was phenomenal that it was still sitting there and hadn't been stolen.
In Nevada, and in associations this big, not that embezzlement can't take place, but there are some controls in place where there'd have to be a conspiracy for the embezzlement, which reduces your odds to have that. But I have not witnessed the embezzlement that has been documented in other HOAs. Generally, the embezzlement that I see takes place in smaller HOAs, where one person's basically in control of the checkbook. There's not a second signature, and they're making all the decisions. Generally, with these management companies and the fiduciary bonds and everything else that are involved, the likelihood of embezzlement is smaller. And even if you were embezzled, you have the insurance from these largers that you could recover it if, in fact, embezzlement did take place.
Well, we've heard, and in fact, my HOA, we lost money. There was one management company that in Virginia a few years ago that embezzled over $2 million from HOAs around the state, or around the area, really. And the only way that the police or the real government ever got involved was when he tried to shoot a police officer.
Wow.
That was a no-no. So they apprehended him, and then they started investigating, and they discovered that he had embezzled that. But there's been millions of dollars embezzled across the country.
In that particular case, I'm curious, in that particular case, was he doing it all by himself, or was there some other employees involved?
I think he was doing it all on his own.
So he was a small management company? He had to be, not to have many employees.
No, he was the chief financial officer. He was the son of the owner, and he just, I don't know, he handled the finances.
Well, as a CFO, I can see how that could happen. Okay.
He's, it's easy. He didn't have any problems. He managed to just embezzle a little bit from here and a little bit from there, and he just took the money. So there's a lot of embezzlement. There's a lot of money that's gone. So kudos to you for discovering that there was all this money sitting there that had not been touched. But I'm curious, if you don't have any 1,600 homes, that's a large association, no amenities other than a little bit of open area, right?
Yeah, it's landscaped. There's a few little, neighborhood parks and things like that, just basic stuff to take care of. It's basically a landscaped community, yeah.
So you return the money,
And but you got on the board to do that, or you had to file a lawsuit?
No, I didn't file a lawsuit. In Nevada, you know, as we recognize with HOAs, everything is regulated by the states and their the governing documents. And in Nevada, there's a process with the Department of Real Estate with an ombudsman that and a commission, and you have to file certain of your complaints and seek intervention affidavits on behalf of the state. So just having that process in place identifies many of the issues and gives the homeowner an opportunity to seek justice without having to go to court.
Okay, so you found the money and you returned the money to the homeowners. You must have been quite a hero.
Well, to some I was a hero, to some I was not. When I say I found the money, I mean the money was sitting there in bank accounts.
Right.
It was sitting there, and it belonged, under my judgment and by the law of Nevada, to the homeowners. But there were board members who did not want to return it to the homeowners. They wanted to spend it on pet projects, or they wanted they didn't believe that you should ever return money. And our reserve funds were funded no less than 100%. You know, for every item. And many of them wanted to spend the money on additional capital expenditures that, you know, many would argue that weren't necessary. And the mixture of the community of the 1,600 homes and the demographics is important as well, because it was quite a diversity. You had approximately 25% young families. You had quite a contingency of seniors living in the area. You had a lot of single people. 35 to 36% were owned by people not living actually in the community. Some of that came about as, you know, the investment bubble that was taking place and people got stuck with properties. And some of it is for people that were anticipating moving there at some time to retirement, and, you know, a mixture of other reasons. So it's quite a diverse community, and it's also quite diverse, you know, racially and ethnically. So it was really a potpourri of people in the community.
Your return, what would the assessments normally be? Is that a monthly, quarterly, annually assessment?
It's quarterly, $175 per quarter. Times four quarters, that's your $700.
So right there, you've got a year's worth of assessments that you're overpaid.
That's correct. That's what I went after. And that is in addition to already subtracting working capital of 2 to 3 months of $100,000 per month. If I'm rounding it off, if it's $100,000 a month equals $1.2 million, it's just a little under that. But see, for the ease of discussion, that's what it is. And yes, there was, in addition to that excess of the 1.2, you had your operating funds that were operating capital that was there, so you were protected by that. In addition, there was an additional $500,000 cushion. In addition to that, there was all the reserves which were set aside, you know, for the capital property that was fully funded based on the actuarial reserve study.
So you got involved with that association, but being a glutton for punishment, you decided that one association wasn't enough to keep you going, right?
Well, let me tell you before I get into that's correct. Before I tell you, let me just give you this board was mad at me. When you asked me if I was a hero, to some I was. To many of the homeowners, I was nicknamed Robert Hood, you know, so, because I was getting their money back. But to the other ones, they thought I was the worst thing that ever happened and that I was an obstructionist to proper management. I thought I was just the opposite. I thought I was, you know, trying to have sound management. And so through a series of events, that board of directors decided to sue me. And they instituted a civil suit, and it was all on bogus charges, trumped up charges, and I knew I would prevail. They thought maybe I would just cave because of the financial pressure, and as a board member at the time, under the Nevada laws, you're indemnified and protected, They didn't want to indemnify me. They wanted to accuse me of all kinds of wrongdoing, none of which was true. And a civil case was initiated. They accumulated lots of attorney's fees for their side, and they arbitrarily assessed my home and put a lien on my home for $18,000. In addition to that, I had to defend myself, and so I was putting out attorney's fees as this civil case was unfolding, and it ended up that I had accumulated over $32,000 worth of legal fees. So you take that $32,000, add the $18,000, I was at risk no less than $50,000. And these are hard dollars that I was at risk for. And eventually, they decided to settle and reimburse me everything, and we settled the case. And that turned out to be, you know, a win for me. And then I did a victory lap because I have a list of homeowners that are, you know, stay in touch with me as it relates to this. I probably shouldn't have done it, but I did a victory lap because I was beating what I considered tyranny, and I wanted that tyranny exposed. And the truth is the best disinfectant. So I didn't want this to happen again. And a long story short, they're suing me again.
Oh, again?
They're going to lose that one too. But it's like, it's just shameful. Just shameful. But then you're right. I'm a glutton for punishment. While I was writing the book in North Carolina, go ahead.
So you left Nevada. Who's in the house now? Is it sitting there empty?
Yeah, I mean, I go back and forth between the two houses. Sometimes I'm a couple months in one place, a couple months in another, and I go back and forth between Nevada and North Carolina.
So nobody's vandalized your house.
Well, I got an alarm system, and I've got all kinds of defenses. I have all kinds of defenses to protect my house.
I hope you've got some cameras.
I got cameras. I've got film. I've got motion sensors. The only thing I don't have in there is Claymore mines to knock them down if they come in through the door.
We're talking to Robert Stern. Robert's written a book, and he's got a website called HOAWars.com. And all of these stories and more are in his book. So it's kind of a fun read. And it'll give you an idea of what people have to suffer in an HOA. But I take my hat off to you because very few people are willing to stand up and fight. But you're not only fighting, but you're also reaching out to people across the country and telling their stories. And putting all of this information out there so that people who are having problems in their HOAs get a chance to maybe get some ideas and know how to proceed to protect themselves. Because that's what it is, right? It's protecting your property and yourself.
Yes, that's one of my motives for writing the book. There's a lot of people out there. There's thousands, as you know, there's thousands and thousands of homeowners that are being abused by these rogue boards that are, you know, abusing their powers. And this, I happen to be fortunate because I had the resources and some of the training to how to fight the fight. But there are people out there that, you know, that have like $300 and $400 issues. And those are big issues to the, we talk about the tyranny and the horror that is brought along just your average citizen who doesn't know how to fight. One of the things that I did in my book was try to show people my thought process of how I created the defenses to protect myself and some of the draft letters that I wrote and some of the things I needed to do in order to prevail. I think the best piece of advice that I can give to anybody that, you know, that is already involved in conflict, you have to evaluate very unemotionally what your issue is in your state. The governing documents, and I know a lot of people don't like to read the legalese and they don't want to pay for an attorney, and I can understand that, and I'm in agreement with them. But what you have to be able to do, whether you have a friend or whether you have something, you really have to understand, whatever your issue is, do you have a winning case by law? do you have a winning case by the governing documents, the CCNRs, the bylaws, the rules and regulations? Because if you do not have a winning case, not by law or whatever, don't take the fight. You're going to lose. Okay? And even if you have a winning case, depending on the severity, the odds are against you prevailing because the ordeal that you're going to have to go through to prevail. The Homeowners Association has the bully pulpit and the resources of the association to work against you. So if you have a rogue board that wants to bully you or harass you, they, in many times, can get away with it because you don't have the financial resources to defeat them. And you may not have the emotional side to defeat them. It takes a lot of guts, a lot of stamina. And as you read many of the stories across the Internet and from the various advocates that I've run into across the country, a lot of these people took the risk, took the fight, because they had the intestinal fortitude to fight it. So, but what I would urge those that are in the fight, if you can't win it because you don't have the financial resources to stand up and you don't necessarily have the intestinal fortitude to go through a legal battle, there's another alternative, and that's the political arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so for those of you out there who hear this, you do not ignore the political arena. You can be extremely powerful in rallying the various homeowners, although most homeowners never want to get involved for fear that they're going to be targeted themselves. But the least expensive route is to get, depending upon, like in the board of directors that I served on, there are five board members. So you need a majority of three in order to prevail. So, and maybe you can't get it all in the first election. Maybe there's, the terms are 2 years or 3 years. So, but if you're seeking justice, if your fight is for justice and you don't have the financial resources, work the neighborhood, work your allies, figure out the numbers of how many people you need to get elected, and then you have to be willing to serve. Because remember, when you sign up for an HOA, everybody's equal in there. And you have just as much right to serve on that board as somebody else. And so that may be your best defense to protect yourself, is to get good people, like-minded people on the board and get the rogue people out of there.
Don't underestimate the power of the press. That is a huge, huge tool that you have, and it is free. And if you can get a local TV station to come out and do a story on you and maybe come into the meeting and get some pictures and put them out there, even if they have the door slammed in their face, they'll put that up on TV. Be prepared, however, because the first thing they're going to do is they're going to accuse you of reducing property values, and that's not true. Because all you're doing is trying to protect your home and your right, and they're the ones who are devaluing your property by denying you the use of your property. Robert, in your book, you have a quote from Reagan, which I think is very appropriate, and especially for what we're talking about, is history teaches us that wars begin when governments believe the price of aggression is cheap. And since board members use your money to fight you, it really is cheap, isn't it?
Yes, that was the whole. That was the reason for that quote. Is because it is very cheap for these board members to bully you with your money and the rest of homeowners' money, and that's where the aggression comes from. If it was their own money, they certainly wouldn't be doing it to you.
Should they perhaps be required to put their own money in there unless there's some really egregious reason for them to go after you?
Well, it depends. I think in the everything's by definition within the governing documents, the CCNRs, and board members are basically indemnified.
Right.
So, I mean, they'll never be putting their own. The only in Nevada, I can't speak with every state. But in Nevada, if they're acting outside the scope of their authority, or if you can, demonstrate willful misconduct, you can get them on the hook. But that's very difficult to do. very difficult to do.
You know, sometimes it's very clear. Sometimes if the homeowner does something that they're really not supposed to do, I have no problem with the board using, especially if it harms someone else, using association money. But sometimes, as you have demonstrated, indicated, and talked about, sometimes boards will just go after a homeowner because they can. And some of the fights are so ludicrous and so ridiculous that to initiate a lawsuit, for instance, because they think your dog weighs 3 ounces more than what the governing document says they can weigh, is an abuse of power, in my opinion, because they're using your money. They're using everybody's money to go after you for something totally idiotic.
Let's talk about the personalities that show up on these boards.
All right, let's go for it.
Let's talk about that for a second, because sometimes there are people who seek out these boards because they've never had power in their lives. They might have been, and I have someone who always gives me this reference, and it's not me, and this is not sexist at all, because the person happens to be female. It's just like someone who was not very popular in high school, who always wanted to be part of the cool group and never quite got accepted, and so that person may run for the board and then get elected or get appointed, because many times there's a lot of resignations and people are appointed. And then they get a little bit of power, and they're just so enamored with their own power that this is why they wanted to be on the board, and that's why. And many of them do not have training, and different. I found along the way, it's really interesting. You know, in most states, there's no training required at all to be a board member. You just have to be a homeowner. Some states, like I know in Florida, there's a lawyer who gives training to prospective board members. But a lot of people seek this power for various different reasons. In my particular case, I came up, for those of you who may know a little bit about psychology, I came up against what's called a borderline personality. And this is a person who can never be wrong. And the minute you cross a person who can never be wrong, they may be, you know, touting your wonderful contributions one day, and the next day you're the worst enemy that could possibly be. And if a person like that is on the board or has any leadership responsibility, they can exercise a lot of influence in coming after a particular homeowner. Wrongfully, but they certainly have that influence.
I've heard it say that the best board members are people who do not want to be on the board.
That's probably a good answer.
So if you don't want to be on the board, maybe you should get on there and take care of it. No, board members come in all varieties. And, yeah, I find that the ones who don't know what they're doing are extremely defensive. And a lot of the problems start with that defensiveness. They're just, you know, you've challenged their authority. How dare you? And they're going to go after you. But I want to go back to something you said about training. Be careful who does the training. Because I did, just for yucks. I was not running for the board. I had been on the board. I had done my homework. I'd been involved in this for years. But just for yucks, I attended one of the board trainings put on by CAI, and the information that was given by the two attorneys who did the training was bad. It was really, really bad information. They gave the exact opposite of new laws, and I think everything was designed to create this tension to further increase their revenues, because if you have fights, then guess who the only winners are the attorneys in the whole thing. So if it's CAI, be very, very careful. Do your own homework.
Speaking of your own homework, for those of you who are listening to this program and you haven't been in an HOA, I want to share with you what I consider are the five key things that you might want to do before you buy into an HOA community, because in some states, in some locales, in some cities, HOAs may be the only game in town that you want to consider. But before you buy into a particular HOA that you're considering, the first thing you want to do is make sure you've made a good financial decision. In new developments, in new properties, I would urge you not to buy a brand new property unless the deal was so lucrative that even if things went wrong, you were still okay. And here's why. In the beginning, with the developers, and they get their flags up and they show you the models and you go look and you get excited and they've got these plans to build this and this is going to be over here and this is going to be over there, and you're looking at their wonderful model inside their selling office. A lot of times the developers do not complete everything they were telling you during the sales pitch. In addition to that, you probably want to wait 3, 4, 5 years for that development to mature, because some of the construction defects, if you happen to have a bad developer or they just make a mistake and something doesn't go right, you want those issues to be flushed out so that you're not at risk for what new developments can put you at risk for. In addition to that, if you're buying into a seasoned property that's at least 5 years old, you want to be able to find out, and the way you would do that is go get copy of the financial statements and ask, if you can't read them, ask somebody to read them for you and determine whether there's adequate reserves that are being in place. What are their assessments like? You don't want to have an assessment pending around the corner the minute you walk in and find out there's an assessment pending that wasn't disclosed to you. So you want to be able to maybe get copies of the minutes of the meetings, look at the financial statements, and you also want to know. And the second key thing is the rules and regulations, the conditions, covenants, and restrictions. You want to read those. Can you have flags and banners, ornaments on your lawn? What's the parking restrictions? What are the pet restrictions? How many pets can you have? Just like Shu said, is the pet 3 pounds too heavy? What about satellite dishes, solar panels? You want to read about all the things that may impact you and your style of living in the way you want to. And one of the ways to determine whether this association that you're about to go into or considering going into, many associations have a Gestapo environment where they're out there fining everybody. And the way you can determine whether you've got that kind of a community going on is when you get those financial statements, get the year end it just ended, and look and see what the fine revenue is. Look and see what, get some more detail on how big that number is. Because if that number is a really big number, you know you're going to be walking into an environment that maybe you don't want to be a part of. The third thing that you want to check out is, what is the attitude? What is the atmosphere? Is there apathy within the community? Does nobody want to serve on the board? Is it almost, and maybe you can talk, if there's a, depending on the size of the community, if there's a community manager, if there's the salespeople that you're talking to, find out somebody who can take the temperature and find out if there's a lot of fighting going on between the neighbors, find out if there's, or just everybody, it's every man for himself and everybody's quiet and they don't want to get involved. The other thing to find out is who's actually serving on your board right now. I call it governance. And try to find out who those board members are and get a copy of the minutes and find out what they're talking about, what they're doing, what they're saying. You want to do that and check out the community as part of your due diligence. And finally, if you've got a specific property in an HOA, walk the street, knock on the doors of your neighbors, find out if it's a rental or an owner, find out what kind of problems they've been having. That kind of due diligence with those five things will help you determine whether this is a community you really want to buy into.
All absolutely excellent advice. Thank you. As a CPA and a chief financial officer yourself, is there a rule of thumb to determine whether or not the reserves are adequate?
Well, I'll tell you how you can tell. You don't have to be a CPA to know that. An actuary, and in most states, in Nevada and in North Carolina, and I don't know about every single state, but usually there's a reserve report which will give you exactly each line item, how much money is involved, what's the useful life remaining. But generally, if you've got a 70 or 80% reserve in in place. You don't have to be 100%. Most places don't have 100% reserves. If you do that, you're in excellent shape. But a lot of places can, you know, survive with a 70 or 80%, provided everything isn't due the next year. You know, it has 1 year of remaining life. If you've got other remaining lives out there, you know, for 5 years and 10 years, and, you know, different pieces of the common area, like whether you have to paint the chain link fences if you happen to have any of those around, different landscaping that has to be replaced because it'll die out, and have reserves for some of that. So you have to check out every single line item, and then in totality, what percentage is involved in terms of being funded.
Also, thank you. I also want to comment on something else. You talked about fines and to check and see how much the association relies on fines and what the fines income is. Do you know, and I like to point this out every chance I get, two states, Virginia being one of them, two courts have found that fines are unconstitutional. And that is because the Constitution requires a separation of powers. In an HOA, you have the same people who are making the laws, finding you in violation of the law, and fining you.
So how did it resolve itself? How does an HOA, in the case where there's legitimate complaints to try to get compliance with the covenants, how does the HOA in Virginia then?
Well, the legislature, and this has got to go back to the Supreme Court, but the legislature in Virginia said you can give away your rights, so as long as you sign that away. But most people don't realize that. They don't understand that they are actually giving up a constitutional right by agreeing to being fined. But I think that's an excellent use of the courts. So, for instance, if your covenants say that you cannot have a meat slaughtering, a butchering shop in your backyard, and you go ahead and have it, and you put one in there, and you bring in all this wildlife, and you start butchering it. Not that anybody's going to do that, but that's one of the things that people say. Oh, you know, you've got to have an association to protect you and prevent you from doing these things.
Yeah, the only thing that gets butchered here in North Carolina for me is when my bushes have gotten fully grown and the landscaper comes in and they got rookies doing it and they butcher my bushes.
Yeah, but they'll tell you that you have to have an HOA because of that. They will tell you is that you have to have an association in case somebody does something like that that's clearly a detriment to the community, to the neighborhood, to everybody. That's where the courts come in. Let the court decide whether or not that really and truly is a violation, and let the court decide what to do about it. Then the homeowner is, if the court agrees with the association, then the homeowner is in contempt of court, and let the courts handle it. Not the neighbors deciding to fine you some outrageous amount, turning it over to the attorneys to collect it. The attorneys will keep adding fees, and the next thing you know is you're losing your home because somebody decided something was wrong that you did, and there's no checks and balances. That's the whole point. There's no checks and balances involved.
If you're going to end up in court, and I don't recommend that to anybody, but if you're going to end up in court, and even if you're not going to end up in court, one of the key tools that any homeowner needs to adhere to is documentation. And so the minute you find yourself in a problem, you should take out a piece of paper and get a folder and start documenting the date and time of when you first discovered that there's a problem, you got an issue, and each subsequent event, whether the homeowners association does something against you or whether you respond, document. And what I would urge you to do that in your documentation back, especially if you have checked out the law and you've checked out the governing documents, you've checked out whatever state laws you've been advised about, you send them documentation stating what your rights are, where they've been violated, and put that on paper, but do it in a very prudent way so that there's an audit trail because if you're going to end up in court, the judge and the lawyers use all of that, but make sure that when you do it accurately and smartly.
Thank you. That's all excellent advice. We are talking to Robert Stern, and Robert's written a book. And you can find out, read all about it. He's got a website at HOAWars.com. So, Robert, that was your battle.
Nevada.
But you also own property in North Carolina, and you're having problems there as well?
It's the strangest thing. This North Carolina retirement community is a wonderful, wonderful community in Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina. And a lot of people, retirees here, coming from the federal government in the Northeastern Corridor, and a lot of professionals. There's about 1,700 lots, about 500, 600 of them are built out now, 4 golf courses, beautiful grounds. It's a very beautiful place. You can see a lot of wildlife comes into the area, the Canadian geese, the herons, the egrets, you got turtles. You even might get scared every once in a while when an alligator shows up. But it's like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's true. We have, you know, all the water hazards on the golf course. Some of these alligators live right near them and in them. So there's a few of those. But it's really a wonderful community. And this particular community has... a lot of people involved in the community. There's committees, there's people doing their work as it relates to it. But somehow, while I was here in North Carolina writing my Nevada story, and I had an incident that took place where the landscaper, there's different sections within Ocean Ridge, and I happen to live in a section called Sedgefield. And under the Sedgefield section, within that section, we are all, those of us, there's about 100 lots, and it's about two-thirds built out. And all of us are required to pay a quarterly amount to have our landscape taken care of. It's supposed to be uniform, and it's the only section. It's the only section within Ocean Ridge that's monitored that way. And the landscaper wasn't doing its job, and so I raised an issue about that. And it's like shooting the messenger. They got really upset with me. And it turned into what, regardless of the facts, regardless of what I was doing was right and everything, I became the bad guy because I spoke up. And sometimes I can be quite aggressive, and sometimes I can be short, and sometimes I can be not as diplomatic and as civil as the South may require. And so I own some of that from my own personality, but at the same time, right is right, and I was on the right side of the issues. And the board chose to unilaterally create problems and take action against us with total violation of due process as required by North Carolina law and the governing documents. So that has led to a fight, and it makes no sense. This fight should never have started, and hopefully it'll end. Hopefully it'll end soon. So, and hopefully it'll. My hope is they declare peace, because I'm prepared, you know, to seek justice, but it makes absolutely no sense.
What's the issue? Why are they going after you? And just because you spoke out?
Well, because there is an agreement, a maintenance agreement between the vendor and the master association. And it calls, you know, you have to put topsoil down, you have to put fertilizer down, you have to treat fungus. It has a lot, it's very specific as the duties of what they're going to do and the dates and the time frames with when they're going to do it. It defines how it's to be done. And it just wasn't being done to the property. And so I made claims about that, and they have a subcommittee. The best word I can use to describe it is the subcommittee that's overseeing this is dysfunctional. And they're not really doing compliance inspections. And if they don't do compliance inspections of all the properties of which they're charged to make sure are maintained, and there's some egos involved in it. There's some people, they have a work order system. And under the work order system, the homeowner is required to put in a work order even for contract maintenance. And it makes no sense. So if I'm in Nevada for 3 or 4 months, and the landscaper is required to do certain services and they don't do them, there's no way I'm going to know that. And so, their point of view is if my whole property deteriorated in that 3 or 4 month period, and I didn't put in a work order for contract maintenance, it's my fault. And I'm opposing that. I mean, that's just not right.
And it's the association that hires these people.
That's correct. And my only obligation under the covenants is to pay the quarterly assessment for that landscaping. And all the rest of the responsibility is
with the association,
and they're derelict in their duties. They're negligent, and they don't like me saying that. My aggressiveness says, "Look, you're just not doing it," and they're defending a flawed system that requires work orders from absentee homeowners when their property's not being maintained. It's illogical.
It sort of begs the question, is it worth it? Would you be farther ahead to contract out with someone to come in and take care of it without having to go through an association?
Don't have that right.
No, but I know it was set up this way, and in this particular instance, that's what you have to do. But I'm saying in general, wouldn't it make more sense not to have to go through this nonsense? Through a third person, just to have someone come and, pull your weeds and landscape your yard.
And take care of it with fertilizer, mow the lawn, and do all the other things. Yes, it would make much more sense in terms of management, okay? Maybe they can get a better price if the vendor they selected was actually performing all of the services. You could probably get a better price by having everybody buy in bulk to take care of all the properties, but you have to have it managed properly for that to make sense.
But then whatever you save in that, you're paying a manager, so, six to one and half a dozen to the other.
Well, it isn't working for me. I mean, there's a lot of homeowners that are satisfied that are here, but you're only as strong as your weakest link in this kind of stuff, and many homeowners won't speak up to support the other homeowners if they're satisfied. They want to stay out of it. So, and for me, if my neighbor were in trouble and they weren't getting what they were entitled to, I'd stand with them and make sure that they got what they were entitled to.
I think so many people are afraid of being targeted by the board. If they do something, then, if they speak up or stand up, then they're going to get targeted, and they don't want to be in the crosshairs, so they just sort of sit back and very quietly maybe send anonymous emails saying, "We support you, we're standing behind you," but they're not there at the board meetings, they're not there en masse saying, "Look, stop, you're out of control.
Some of the people in this community define being nice and going along is if the landscaper isn't doing what they're supposed to do, their solution is to continue to pay the landscaper, and then whatever deficiencies are taken, they'll go hire somebody else to take care of it to bring it up to speed. Okay, and that in their definition, that they think that's the right thing to do. I see that differently, but I don't understand that, but everybody's different, and that's what happens.
So you own, that's your home. That's the one you live in.
I have two first homes.
And then you also have two rentals?
I do have rentals here in the Ocean Isle Beach area, Sunset Beach area of North Carolina. I have two condominiums, one on the east island of the – there's actually an island of Ocean Isle Beach. On the east end of that island is a condo there, and I have another condo overlooking the Intercoastal Waterway which is magnificent. It's a spectacular view of the marshlands, the Intercoastal Waterway, the marshlands, and the entrance to the Atlantic Ocean.
And are you having problems with those?
No, not at all. Not at all. Those are running very, very smoothly.
How do you know?
Well, I know because one of my best buddies who's here is on the boards of those and is very close to them. And I can tell by the information that I get in my dialogue with him and he's a stand-up guy, and the people that are on those boards are stand-up people, and they're just doing an excellent job. I mean, all HOAs don't have to be bad. They really don't, but many of them are.
No, you're right. They don't have to be bad, but you're only ever one election away from having everything turn around, so... Due diligence, keeping track of what's going on, I mean, those have got to be ongoing issues.
You're absolutely right about that. You are only one election away from tyranny. That's true.
You talk about some of the board members in your book, and you talk about the board members having good intentions.
Yeah, I think I have to say this. Every board member I've ever met has good intentions in terms of serving the community. From my experience, the people I've got involved with, some of the people that are doing some of these things that aren't wrong think they're doing the right thing. I mean, there's a difference of opinion of what's appropriate in the best interest of a community. But sometimes a herd mentality, especially if the herd doesn't have a strong leader with the right type of training, these things can go south very, very quickly. If you have, and especially if they're being fed by an attorney who wants to make a buck,
yeah,
and you have a weak community manager in larger situations where community managers are, and this type of conflict feeds, then you can have the perfect storm where everything can go wrong, and it does. But I, even the people who I have ended up being adversarial with, I believe in their heart of hearts, they, except for, you know, in the cases where you have the criminal aspect involved, these people are thinking they're doing the right thing.
Well, you did say that you thought that they all had good intentions, but that some of them were actually too weak to stand up for what's good for the homeowners.
Yes, and sometimes people, they don't know what is good for the homeowners. There's a difference of opinion. I mean, look at our national politics as to what we think is good for the country and what's not good for the country, and the politics of all that. Homeowners associations are very similar to that kind of functioning.
I think, you know, there's supposed to be democracies, mini democracies, but sometimes the homeowners are shut out. They're not given access to the governing documents. They're not given access to the financial situation. They're not given access to anything. They're kept out of meetings. In some cases, they've been arrested before a meeting starts and locked up in the back of a cruiser with handcuffs on while the meeting goes on, just so that they're not in the meeting.
Well, state laws govern that, and local municipalities govern that, and I wouldn't be able to comment that on that, except depending upon the couple states that I know real well. But generally, you should. The principles are you have to have access and due process. That's America, and unless you've waived your rights under your governing documents to do that, you should have that access.
Now, I agree with you, and frankly, some of the, especially the older governing documents, will specify that you have access to everything in the association.
That's right. You have audit rights. You can ask for documents. You can ask for, you know, they have a reasonable period of time to present them to you. You can evaluate them, and it's just part of reasonable due diligence to protect your investment.
Robert, we've got about a minute left. So is there anything that you want to leave our listeners with? But before we go, I definitely want you to talk about your website.
I can talk about HOAwars.com, and I'm going to have two book signings, one in Sunset Beach on December 6th and one in Las Vegas on January 29th. And to all those people who may be hearing this who are discouraged because they're fighting a war, send me an email on my website. Love to help you out, and because I know you need allies, and the battles, you shouldn't be alone when you take on these fights.
No, the battles shouldn't be alone. And again, stand up for your rights, because if you don't, you lose them.
Exactly.
Robert, thank you so much. Good luck with your lawsuits, the upcoming lawsuits. And I hope you come back. Let us know how the book is going. You just started. It just came on, right?
It's just out now. Yeah, it's just out.
It's just out. So you guys are hearing about it for the first time right here. Except, well, we did do a show last week. So, but again, thank you, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me, Shoop. It was a real pleasure.
For all of you, make sure you go to HOAWars.com.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.